Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up on the program, the United Nations condemns the killing of dozens of internally displaced civilians at its base in South Sudan. We hear from the spokesperson of the UN Secretary General.
This attack on a location where civilians are being protected by the United Nations is a serious escalation. The Secretary General reminds all parties that any attack on United Nations peacekeepers is unacceptable and constitutes a war crime.
African immigrants in Germany's city of Berlin go on a hunger strike to protest against the asylum policy.
Haven't like got any benefits like refugees, like going to school almost 5 to 6 years. I'm just kept in one place, so life is actually no good at all.
These stories and more to come in the next 25 minutes. Stay with us.
Top story.
The United Nations on Friday sounded the alarm of an upsurge in vicious communal violence after dozens were killed in an attack on civilians sheltering in a UN base. In an exclusive interview with Deutsche Welle's Africa Link program, the UN's top official in South Sudan, Toby Lanza, said this week has seen enormous violence in parts of South Sudan and has called on the rebels and the government troops to stop fighting. In a moment, we'll be hearing from him, but first, for a follow-up on the attack, here's a report by James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
The UN says 350 armed young men stormed the United Nations compound to attack nearly 5,000 people sheltering there as they celebrated the fall of the oil-rich city of Bentiu to rebels led by the country's fugitive former Vice President Riek Machar. Lor Ageng Deng, one of the leaders of the young men believed to belong to South Sudan's largest tribe, the Dinka, had this explanation for the attack.
When Bentiu had been captured by a rebel loyal to Riek Machar, people in UN came to celebrate. They celebrate because Bentiu had been captured by rebels. This is why the youth of the Boer community say why these people celebrate in our land and they are here.
Most of the camp inhabitants belong to the Nuer ethnic group. It seems that their celebrations had provoked some elements among the Dinka population, to which South Sudan's president Salva Kiir also belongs. South Sudan's Army Director of Information, Brigadier General Malaka Yuen, told local journalists in the capital Juba that the government had not been able to confirm the precise number of people killed in the attack.
Because we have no access to United Nations mission in South Sudan compound, we were unable to confirm casualties from the United Nations mission in South Sudan and the IDP's site.
Brigadier Yuen said the government had launched an investigation. Meanwhile, spokesman for the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Joseph Contreras, gave a more detailed account of events at the UN base.
Despite repeated warning shots from some of our Indian battalion peacekeepers, the mob entered the protection of civilian site through the gate and attacked some of the civilians who we are sheltering at that facility in the Jonglei state capital. Our peacekeepers returned fire after elements of the mob opened fire on some of those civilians, and dozens of those internally displaced persons were wounded in the attack and are receiving medical attention at that UNMISS compound. Two of our own armed uniformed peacekeepers sustained minor injuries during the attack.
Contreras did not comment on the possibility that the attack could have been tribally motivated.
They clearly had some kind of grievance with the peacekeeping mission, but their violent means of behaving is completely unacceptable, of course, and we hope to have further information about their motivation.
As a consequence of the attack in Bor, Contreras said the UN has tightened security at other compounds.
We have asked all commanding officers at our various installations scattered across South Sudan to put their personnel on high security alert, and we are all the time reinforcing the perimeters around those installations and also assigning military peacekeepers and specially trained police to conduct patrols in and around those compounds.
That report was filed by James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Before we came on air, Toby Lanza, the UN top official in South Sudan, spoke to Africa Link about the attack by the gunmen who he says had earlier posed as peaceful protesters before storming the UN base.
Well, what we know is that there was a demonstration of some 350 people, mostly men dressed in civilian clothing, who left the center of Or. They were walking towards the United Nations peacekeeping base, which is on the outskirts of town. We understood that they were going to deliver a petition to the United Nations, and of course, we were perfectly willing to accept that. The demonstration upon approaching our gate became very, very violent. The demonstrators forced their way into our base, and in particular towards an area of our base where we had been helping some 5,000 civilians, mostly women and children, who have been caught in the midst of conflict here in South Sudan. The demonstrators opened fire on the civilians, and as is our mandate and our obligation, we returned fire and repelled this very violent and totally unprovoked attack on the civilians who were inside our base.
How much is this attack a setback to peace initiatives aimed at bringing stability in South Sudan?
Well, this week in particular has been very bad for anybody who is joining us in the search for peace in South Sudan. We've had tremendous levels of violence in Upper Nile State, in Unity State, and in Jonglei State. Just earlier this week, opposition forces took control of the capital of Unity State. This is a city called Bentiu. During the fighting and thereafter, in particular, there were terrible atrocities committed. We have a team on the ground there, but we know that there was very deliberate and targeted killing of people based on nothing but their identity. So it's really put South Sudan in a cycle of tit-for-tat revenge, which is casting a terrible shadow over the country, making it harder and harder for communities who are interested in peace to search for that peace. And it's making it almost impossible for the vast majority of the population caught in these states of Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile to do what is most needed at this very precious time of the year. This is the planting season. This is when the rains begin to fall in those areas. It's when people go to their fields and work. It's when they tend to their livestock and make sure that towards the end of the year there is a harvest. And if we miss the planting season, it doesn't take much imagination to conjure up a picture of what the suffering and the level of extreme food insecurity will have reached here by the end of the year.
Do you think the international community is paying enough attention to what is happening? Because the conflict in South Sudan is displacing thousands each day that passes by.
We have been reaching out to the media. We're delighted that you are engaging more at this moment. However, it needs to be underlined that it is not the international community or the international media that will solve this. It is the people of South Sudan, in particular their leaders, who have to reconcile their differences by the way of mediation and not the barrel of a gun. What the international community can do is accompany that process and provide a helping hand.
I was speaking to Toby Lanza, the UN top official in South Sudan.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
The Nigerian military on Friday admitted that many of the more than 100 schoolgirls abducted by suspected Boko Haram Islamists in the country's northeast remain missing. The military had claimed on Wednesday that all but 8 of the girls were still in captivity, claims refuted by the state governor and the school principal. Meanwhile, as Nigerians mark the Christian holy period of Easter, I spoke to our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Chemang, and he started by telling me the mood in the country's capital, Abuja.
The mood in Abuja is just the mood of the nation itself. Two very recent things. The bombing in Anyanya, a suburb of Abuja, is still very, very fresh in the minds of Nigerians. People are still lamenting. People are still in a shock. Outside that, about 100 girls are still missing in the bushes. in Borno State. So it's a serious kind of a mourning where people feel it should be a very sober kind of a reflection. People should rather unite and ensure that the evil ones among us are actually fished out and defend the law.
Has security been tightened around churches during the Easter festive season?
Yes, Isaac, I want to tell you that security is tight in churches and even mosques. And the spokesman for the police force signed a release as directed by the Inspector General of the police. It's directing that churches and mosques should not be crowded with vehicles and that they should ensure vigilance. They should check people they don't know within themselves, and people carrying strange bags or leaving strange bags, or people just abandoning cars that they don't know.
And are there any new developments in the search for the missing girls?
Honestly, for now, there are no new developments, rather than the parents saying that they will go into the bushes to join security forces in search for these their loved ones. And the signals we are getting is that some have actually gone into these bushes, some are returning without any information, and the bushes are just not a thing of a kilometer or two. No, it's a very wide range of a place, a kind of. And of course, it's mountainous, there are caves, so it's not easy to trace where they are for now.
Other than the armed terrorism squad of the police that you've just mentioned, what other security measures has government put in place to improve on security?
There is what you call stop and search. They just stop vehicles at random and search. Apart from that, they also have roadblocks where every vehicle passing has to be checked. Whether you're coming into Abuja or going out of Abuja, and it's around the Federation. And of course, you have the plainclothes policemen, but they don't wear uniform, so that they can always mingle and see what is happening to see if they could be perpetrators of crime.
Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Human rights.
Now, in a real democracy, citizens enjoy, among others, the freedom of assembly. But that's not the case in some countries where governments use certain laws and institutions to silence the opposition and others with dissenting views. In Zambia, opposition political parties and civil society organizations have complained that the government is using the police through a law called Public Order Act to stop them from holding meetings and demonstrations. Stephen Poko reports.
The Zambian Public Order Act is a law that gives powers to the police to deny permission for people to meet or demonstrate if they suspect the gathering will threaten public security. Critics of the government think the police have abused this power. The main opposition political party in the country, the UPND, has of late been the victim of the now infamous law. Kuchunga Simsamba is UPND's Deputy Secretary General.
And what the police have been doing is that they are taking us back to the colonial application. As we have written to the police since the PF came into power 42 different times. And out of those 42 times, the police under the PF instruction have only allowed us twice. And even at these times when we had these instances, they allowed PF cadres to come and harass us to try and disrupt this gathering.
The Zambian police force is largely perceived as a political tool used by the ruling Patriotic Front, PF, to silence the opposition. It is common to see pro-government supporters demonstrating, but the opposition political parties are usually stopped from doing the same. The police insist they are not being used by politicians, but that they are simply enforcing the law. Recently, a grand coalition on the constitution comprising opposition political parties, civil society organizations, and others were also refused a permit by the police to demonstrate to demand for the release of the new draft constitution. The Home Affairs Minister Ngosa Simbiakula warned that they would meet the wrath of the police if they contravened the law. Some political activists like Dante Saunders say the police are compromised because they are at the mercy of the president.
The president has a right to appoint the police officers, to appoint the judiciary. These are institutions which is supposed to be helping the people of Zambia by solving some of the corruption issues in our country. When you have those kind of powers, it's very difficult to say to the police, can you please protect us? Because the president can just give instructions, go out and pick up Dante Saunders. I don't like what he said today.
Kuchunga Simsamba from the biggest opposition political party, UPND, says the police in Zambia are now acting as prosecutor, judge and jury.
As of now, the police are going beyond what is in the statute. They've actually even taken the role of court. They are now even beginning to interpret the law, which is what the judiciary should be doing.
The political activist Dante Saunders strongly feels that this type of behavior should come to an end. He thinks the only way to stop the government infringing on people's rights is to have a new constitution that will allow the police to perform professionally.
So for us, we believe that the only way forward for us is to ensure that we have a constitution which will protect the rights of people and protect the rights of institutions like the police, the judiciary, and all these other institutions that are supposed to be working and protecting the interests of the people.
Several attempts to talk to Zambia's Home Affairs Minister Ngosa Simbiakula were unsuccessful. Despite all the frustrations, the opposition political parties seem to be determined to do everything possible to have their voices heard.
Stephen Poko with that report. African immigrants who seek refugee status in Europe often face long waits before governments give them permanent residence visas. In Germany last year, some refugees created tent camps to protest this system. Most of the tent camps were cleared this spring, but a group of immigrants from Africa has stayed put. They've launched a hunger strike in Berlin to draw attention to their cause. Michael Scaturo reports from the German capital.
More than a week has passed since the five refugees from Africa embarked on a hunger strike. They're wrapped in blankets and sitting in a park located in the middle of Berlin. When you look at them, you see immediately that they've gotten weak. As I get ready to talk to them, a man jogging by takes a quizzical look in their direction and then keeps on running. A few residents bring them juice and water.
I'm Patrice Vancy and I'm 35 years old.
Patrice is one of the people on hunger strike. Before he sought asylum in Germany, he was a gay rights activist in Uganda. He's already been here for 4 years, but has not yet been granted permission to settle in Germany permanently.
I went on my activism until I got a serious threat, and in 2010, I was forced to leave the country.
Until last week, Patrice lived in Berlin's sprawling refugee tent camp at the Oranienplatz Park. Though the camp was raised by German government officials, the refugees were given temporary visas and housing elsewhere. But Patrice says that if he had taken the offer, he'd be back where he started. He says he wants a permanent visa to stay in Germany and the opportunity to restart his life.
Yeah, but these hostels they are giving, that's what we are protesting. Yeah. This house they offered to these people, that's what I said the cheap promises and which even they didn't explain. How long, with no guarantee, how long these people are going to stay in these houses.
Standing next to him is Abi. He's also an asylum seeker from Uganda. He says he spent the last 5 years living in a refugee center in Bavaria, in southern Germany. For him, refugee housing is basically like being in jail.
Haven't like got any benefits like refugees, like going to school almost 5 to 6 years. I'm just kept in one place, so life is actually no good at all.
Sudanese refugee Napoli Langa, who became the face of the protest against Germany's asylum policy and was one of the camp's organizers before it was demolished, says her group has a few simple demands.
Like, we have three demands, you know, to abolish the lagers. You know lagers, yeah? Lagers is a camps and prison who, you know, people, you know, German people put us as a camp, but it's really ridiculous kind of things. And then also we have deportation issue, that we need to abolish deportation, and also the freedom of movement within Germany.
But it's unclear whether the refugees' demands will be met. And until EU laws are changed, the immigrants are essentially stuck where they are. While some of the asylum seekers' applications were accepted, those who arrived in Germany via other countries, like Greece, could face deportation back to Greece if they petitioned the German government for asylum. This is due to a European Union-wide immigration law known as Dublin II. Some of the migrants say they want to see Dublin II changed, but migration experts say that's unlikely to happen.
That report was compiled by Michael Scaturo in Berlin.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we've been covering on this program. Abubakar Diallo joined me in the studio shortly before we came on air.
This week's USA is dedicated to the winners of our quiz competition. Anita Doji Denu from Accra, Ghana, won the top prize, a laptop. She is 21 years old and a student at the University of Ghana in Legon.
And what did Anita have to say when she found out she had won a prize from AfricaLink?
Excited, that's what she told me in a telephone interview. She had a bit more to say about Deutsche Welle and this very program, AfricaLink. Let's have a listen.
AfricaLink's reporting makes it easier for people who haven't gone through higher education to follow. So it's not only for some particular people, but then everybody who wants to be informed can get information.
What do you think about the information that AfricaLink broadcast?
It's wonderful. For instance, the report on the SNA storage company. We used to have these factories in the northern Ghana, but then they went down. Nobody picked it up. So hearing something like the SNA storage company, like them, taking the business from the government and being able to make some progress, it encourages you to also do something like that in the future. And then there was something about Vicky Remoer, or someone who had a mobile company, that was surprising because I didn't know that people could have offices which are not stationary, but people can go to a different country and a different city. The person can still maintain the business. What I know is that you have an office in a particular place and then you work from there. I didn't know that you could even work without paying rent charges to landlords or landladies. So when you hear these things, you get ideas from other people.
Can you tell me how you felt when you heard on the radio that you have won a prize from AfricaLink?
The first thing was surprise. Surprise because I am sure there were many people who took part in the contest. Actually, I haven't taken part in anything like this before. I actually took part because I knew it was DW. DW has a good reputation, so I took part because I knew it was a credible institution.
Congratulations to Anita from Ghana for winning the top prize in our AfricaLink competition. Did other winners also comment?
Yes, the winner of the tablet, Richard Ayikwe, said, "I am so excited. Finally, I have a gift for my little brother for this Easter."
Thank you, Abubakar, and we are also very happy for all the winners, and thank you to all who took part in the competition. You can respond to topics covered on AfricaLink or on our website by sending us a text message on +49 160 957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Your say will be back at the same time next week. And now, before we leave you to enjoy your Easter holidays, here's a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you on the show. The United Nations has condemned the killing of internally displaced persons at its base in South Sudan. The Nigerian army admits that most of the 129 girls abducted by Boko Haram Islamists remain missing. We've also been hearing from African immigrants in Germany's city of Berlin who are on a hunger strike demanding recognition by the authorities. And with that, we come to the end of the program. On behalf of the AfricaLink team, I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a happy Easter.